Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello. Welcome to the Latin American History Podcast. Episode 150, A New Australia in Paraguay, Part 4. When I'm dealing with well-known topics, like the conquest of the Aztec or Inca, there are normally plenty of books and other sources which I can use as material. When it comes to a story as obscure as this one, sometimes there's almost nothing to go on. Luckily in this case, an Australian named Gavin Souter has written a comprehensive book on the subject, named A Peculiar People, and he even went as far as visiting Paraguay to track down the descendants of the new Australians. Without this book, I don't know if I would have been able to tell this story. In his book, he says this, quoting a man called John Sibbald, who was one of the colonists. The trouble with Utopia, as John Sibbald remarked, was that you were expected to know everybody. In Adelaide, one can choose his friends, he wrote. You may know your next door neighbour, or not, as you please. But in New Australia, you must know him, and his 199 neighbours and neighbouresses. He has a brother's right to intrude into your most sacred precincts. Now, I like that quote. It probably rings true across most cultures, but in the individualist Anglosphere, it's particularly resonant. In England, there's a phrase that an Englishman's home is his castle, and we are brought up to enjoy quite a bit of privacy. Australia, I have learned from my time living here, is even more like this. Vast suburbs are built with no communal places where you might get to know your neighbours. Because there is so much land, houses are big, and you can retreat into them. Suburbs are so sprawling that often you can't really walk anywhere, and combined with the fact that so much of the time it's hot, air-conditioned cars rule, and there is hardly any life on the streets. All of this is in the context of Australia already being located far from most of the rest of the world. It really does feel like most would like to be left alone and to engage with other people only when they choose to. One of the reasons that I love Latin America and Mediterranean Europe is the more communal culture. I genuinely think that our brains have evolved to require it as a survival mechanism from our time living as hunter-gatherers in the bush and relying on each other. Incidentally, this time accounts for something like 98% of human history. I can't escape my British upbringing, however, and after a while in close quarters with people, I do find myself wanting a bit of space and the control over things like what to eat and when, what to spend money on, and things like that, which space brings. This mentality and culture is not going to encourage the success of a utopia in which everything is shared and decisions are made communally. And as Sibbald says there, I think that this cultural legacy probably helped to undermine New Australia significantly, albeit in much subtler ways than arguments about where the money was and if Lane had tyrannical tendencies. One of the reasons cited for the collapse in belief that the utopia could be established was selfishness. People trying to stash resources away for themselves, rather than adding them to the communal pot. This may have largely been driven by simple greed, but I wouldn't be surprised if some people did it because they wanted some of that personal control over what they ate and when. At the end of last episode, two things happened. Firstly, the rebels went off to found their own settlement, and secondly, a second group of settlers arrived. At this point, the damage was done. The new settlers didn't represent a clean slate of idealistic people, untouched by the previous disputes, and an opportunity for Lane to learn from previous mistakes and keep this new population tied to the project. Instead, his supporters had actively tried to make them aware of the discord on the journey over, so they were well aware of it and would have learnt more from the remaining new Australians in the days just after their arrival. One of the reasons I find this story so fascinating is that it is like an almost unbridled social experiment for one strand of left-wing politics to play out and to see if its ideas can work and if the criticisms made of it by others play out. I don't have a personal agenda either way. I'm just following the story, but this particular experiment, for whatever reason, isn't one which left-wing advocates are likely to use as evidence for the practicality of their ideas. A criticism that you sometimes hear today is that left-wing politicians would rather preach to the choir than engage with everyone else. It was often said about Jeremy Corbyn in the UK and his supporters. Lane appears to have decided that he didn't care how small his colony got and how many people defected, as long as those he did have were 100% committed. He didn't want to win people over to his ideas and projects. Instead, if you had any doubt, he wanted to find it and use it as leverage to dislodge you. Some of those who had signed up, excited to help create and live in a socialist society, would have arrived into this poisoned atmosphere and quickly realised that something had gone wrong. Then, perhaps they would have become determined to help turn things round. But when the leadership of the settlement was making it clear that it didn't want you to do this, it would rather you left, you were probably even more likely to decide to do just that. When you add in the fact that now there was actually somewhere alternative to go, the rebel settlement, it's not surprising that many just left, and Lane supporters quickly became the minority. There were no longer communal meetings to expel people or to attempt to change things. Over the first couple of weeks after the arrival of the second group, people simply walked off to the rival settlement without a word. Lane decided that the different departments, farming, building, food storage, needed leaders, and he appointed these leaders himself, usually from his Queensland bushmen. There was some argument that these positions should be elected, but he ignored this. Lane called everyone who left scabs and encouraged them to go. A man named Gilbert Casey decided to try to play the role of peacemaker. In the book, Souter described Casey as an idealist, but suggests that he enjoyed dissenting. Now that's fair enough when you are dissenting against the establishment of the British Australian colony, but it's a problem when you're actually in the left-wing society you had been dissenting for and still can't stop dissenting. Whether this characterisation is fair or not, I don't know, but Casey had decided to stay in the original settlement and had taken to trying to persuade Lane to change some of his ways. He had trodden a narrow path and managed to do this while still retaining Lane's trust and not being told to leave like everyone else who disagreed with Lane. Now he decided to bring the two settlements together for a meeting to see if things couldn't be resolved. They convened halfway between the two colonies, and a vote was proposed to reconstitute the power structure of the colony. If this happened, the separatists might be happy to return. It was decided that a new management council would be created, and its members elected by popular votes. The votes for these positions then took place, and Lane was not elected to any position.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
So that was to be the end of the separation. Except, of course, it wasn't, because Lane was not satisfied to have been ousted. He was entitled to remain in the newly united New Australia as an ordinary member, but instead he decided that he would now separate from the colony. Before we look at Lane's actions, it's worth noting as a few of the separatists also refused to join the original settlement. So, there will now be three different settlements. Lane was probably trying to cast things in the best possible light. But knowing what we do about his character, I think there's a good chance that he actually believed what he wrote to his deputy in Australia when he said that things had worked out perfectly and that his opponents had done the work for him of drawing all the dissenters together and cutting them out of his project. There were 403 Australians in Paraguay at this point. 63 followed Lane. The original New Australia now had the bulk of the population, with about 220. That original rebel settlement, now officially given new land by the Paraguayan government, now had about 100, but some decided to give up and leave for Australia. Many of these had no money at all, and they paddled the long distance downriver to Buenos Aires on homemade boats. Casey was among those who stayed with Lane, but he was sent to Australia to try to persuade the man Lane had just written to that all of their resources, still stashed there, were to go to Lane and not the original colony. Something which confused the man, as he only had second-hand information to go on, and was coming under a great deal of pressure. Lane also instructed his wife to return, but she seems not to have been in a hurry to do so, spending 10 months in Australia in total. So his group camped a little distance away, while they searched for the right land to build a new settlement. Five of them made a secret plan to leave, and just disappeared one day. Their defection caused more problems than just their absence. They stole the royal tar, and sailed it downriver towards Buenos Aires. The Argentine authorities stopped them, however, saying that they didn't have the right customs clearance, and they confiscated the boat. The men themselves managed to continue their journey, and made it all the way back to Australia within a year. In the end, this next little story will be a meaningless aside, but it is a good dramatic one. When Lane found some land to buy, he had to get the Paraguayan Minister of Colonization to approve the plan. Lane had an appointment to see him in his office at 2 o'clock one afternoon, but at 11 a.m, the minister was detained as part of a coup against the president. The coup was peaceful, and the vice president would be put in charge temporarily before new elections could be held. And none of this would end up having much effect on policy towards New Australia. But that morning must have been a confusing and exciting one. So the land for the new New Australia was 45 miles south of the old New Australia, and just 10 from the original rebel settlement. Instead of New Australia, it would be called Cosme. That proximity to those people who had rebelled against Lane, but refused to rejoin the original settlement once he was deposed, did not prove to be a problem. While the new post-coup government was happy to continue dealing with Lane and the inhabitants of the original New Australia as before, they didn't like the fact that there was this third colony which possessed neither the original land or leadership their predecessors had authorised and dealt with. They put pressure on it, and it quickly seeped away into nothing as its population left. They drifted to Buenos Aires without even the money to sustain themselves, and appealed to various Australian state governments to repatriate them. appeals which were denied. Things were really difficult for these people, and they were treated with suspicion, because it was assumed that they must have been militant anarchists or communists. They struggled to survive, basically living as beggars, while they waited for some sort of help. It's hard to trace what happened to them all. The government of Queensland finally agreed to provide a small amount of money, which stretched to fetching a few families. Others ended up staying in South America, while some managed to reach England. One woman and her children, who were deserted by the father, was also rescued by the Salvation Army and brought back to Australia. Suter's book hints at some extremely interesting stories that some of these people were later involved in, but unfortunately it gives no real detail. Apparently some tried to capture a Spanish boat docked in northern Argentina during the Spanish-American War. It's not clear why the boat was there, why they took it upon themselves to do this, or generally what the context was. Another apparently fought in a separatist revolution in a Brazilian province. One man, who had been 18 when he left Australia for Paraguay, and who left the colony penniless, having given his £60 into the communal fund, managed to make his way back to Australia on an extremely circuitous route via England and Germany. He either stowed away or signed on as a crew member on various boats to get there without any money. When interviewed by an Australian newspaper once he'd made it home, he said that he didn't regret investing his money into New Australia and thus losing it all. For him, it was a small price to pay for all the adventure he'd had. For many, though, the fun was over. Next episode, we'll trace the slow death of New Australia's political project. If you've enjoyed this episode and want to do something to help out, one thing that's really useful is leaving a review wherever you get your podcasts from. A huge thank you to everyone who's already done this. And thank you to everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by me, Max Sargent, edited by Alex McNamara. If you've enjoyed the podcast and want to get access to extra episodes, you can become a friend of the podcast. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. The podcast is also available on YouTube by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. If you'd like to send me a message, or if you have any questions, you can email me at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.